Hey guys, how's it going? My name is Joseph Fordham and this is NPLH In Conversation With, the football podcast that isn't about football, brought to you by NPLH Studio. NPLH is more than a podcast. Once you've hit the follow button, visit nplhmag.com to enjoy online reads, subscribe to our newsletter and browse our collection of magazines, prints and apparel. On to the show. Hello, I'm Joe Fordham and you're listening to NPLH. In this episode, I speak with US artist Jeff Gouveia. Jeff takes us through his journey from cutting his teeth on the unloved buildings of Riverside, California, to working with leading brands in the industry such as FIFA and Adidas. He recalls how an inspirational trip to Brazil in 2014, during a crossroads in his career, planted seeds for a change in direction and how he set about making that happen on his return home. Jeff's career shows us how backing yourself publicly and an air of tenacity are often as important as artistic ability, if not more, and how elementary school may have offered some spoilers on how his life would pan out. Before we start, a quick reminder that NPLH is more than a podcast. Once you've hit the follow button, visit nplhmag.com, where you can enjoy online reads, subscribe to our weekly newsletter, and browse our collection of magazines, prints, and apparel. NPLH is an independent, ad-free platform, and your support, in whatever form, keeps us playing. Enjoy.
Hey Jeff, how you doing?
I'm good.
How's the sound? I usually partially hide behind the mic, which just inexplicably stopped working about 2 minutes before I came in. So is this sound okay for you?
Yeah, no, it's great.
Nice one. You're in California, aren't you?
Yeah. But I'm in my warehouse. It's like our studio, and So I don't know if you want a better location, but it's kind of cold in here, so that's why I'm like bundled up. But
mate, I know all about the cold. We're speaking in the middle of a British winter, and yesterday. It's quite amusing to me. We've got similar outfits on. And you're what I would consider to be t-shirt and shorts weather.
Yeah. I mean, it's like this morning it was pretty cold, like just above freezing. But it's gonna, you know, double that in the next few hours. But yeah, in the warehouse it remains kind of cold. I'm sure not the same as England.
Yeah. But thanks for taking the time to jump on this with me. I'll admit I am quite new to learning about your work, which feels quite shameful. Well, I've probably seen it, but without being aware of who was behind it. So I guess that's what I mean by that. And I saw it and I was like, okay, yeah, I need to speak to this guy, especially once I got the gist that you had made a switch to more football focused projects during a kind of a universal shift, as it were. I was quite excited to speak with you. And the more I've kind of dug around, which isn't any kind of, I've not gone all Magnum PI and come up with loads, but yeah, quite an interesting slant on things. And I think an approach that aligns with like my values and NPLH and this kind of thing. So yeah, curious to learn how you go from, as I learned today, barista fresh out of high school to a guy that's creating art for leading brands around the world, which is quite a fascinating trajectory.
Yeah, I mean, when you put it that way, it's pretty simple. Or, you know, it just is like, oh, that's weird, but it has been just one foot in front of the other. I mean, there's so many twists and turns. I'm blessed to have that trajectory and to have had the opportunities I've had. It's funny when you look back on it, you've simplified my life for the last 12 years in a sentence, and it's like it's easy to make it like that, but when you're in it, you're just like, man, nothing's happening. But it is cool. It's cool. God is good to show that in that time frame.
Was there like an alternative for you through this phase, or are you at that point in your life 12 years ago where where you are now is the be all and end all. And as a result of that, you were driven through that process.
I mean, that's a great question. I honestly don't know if I could have even laid out my business model 7 years ago. I mean, the way that I make money is by partnering with brands and entities within the world of football. That's predominantly how I make money. And I didn't even know it was possible to partner with entities like that on an individual level like I do. So I could not have dreamed that up 12 years ago. When I started, I was really fascinated with, can I create the biggest thing possible? So when I was a barista, I was taking my wages and spending it on paint and then just going to abandoned places in the city that I live in. I live in Riverside, California. It's like an hour east of LA.
I've been
and
to a wedding
there's
there.
There's a bunch of...
I've actually okay. been to... Yeah. Oh, no. Temecula. So that's not far, right?
Okay, yeah. You would drive through Riverside to get to Temecula. It's pretty close.
Sorry to cut you off.
Temecula's in Riverside County. Yeah, no, it's good. Yeah, Temecula's in Riverside County. So maybe you heard that that name. But yeah, there's a bunch of abandoned things not too far from where I'm at that were heavily laden with graffiti and just were bombed out. And I was taking paint and whatever I could over to those locations and just trying to paint as big as possible. And I benefited through the rise of Instagram. When I graduated college, it was 2013. And that's right when Instagram is heating up. That's becoming a major player for marketing. And I was just sharing the work that I was doing online. And I was gaining a little bit of a following through that, just simple sharing. It was much easier back then to do well on social because there weren't as many people putting their art. Everyone was really focused on photos. And so if you just put your art, you were simply standing out. And I was doing large scale work. And a funny adage that I'll say is when you don't know how to paint, just paint really big, because people don't know the difference between like what's good and what's not. If it's really large, they don't care. So I had a leg up on the competition in that way too, because I was painting really large pieces and people were wondering how I was able to get it. And it was just because I was painting in abandoned spots. And, you know, through the years, I was working with other coffee brands. Like coffee and soccer have been my two loves. You know, I grew up playing football and really liked the idea of being with people, and the coffee shop is kind of that. So, you know, those two things have always been intertwined in my life. And at the beginning, I was doing a lot of work for coffee brands, and they just didn't have the budget. They didn't have the budget to support me. And I took a trip in 2014 to the World Cup in Brazil and looked around and saw how the culture in Brazil was so football oriented. And I had this thought, like, why couldn't that be possible within the USA? And obviously that's like a grandiose thing. Like Brazil is the Mecca for football. It's miles above USA and everywhere around the world in terms of its love for football. But it was, you know, in every single advertisement, there was something football oriented. And it wasn't just because of the World Cup. It was just like Neymar was used to market, the chips was used to market, the cell phone was used to market, whatever. And I thought, well, as an artist, I could partner with those brands who are trying to target football fans within the USA, and just started to make this goal of what would it look like to partner with an Adidas or, you know, a team in the Premier League, and just started going to these little conventions and little things that were like football specific. So, you know, the business of football, I was going, and most of the people were in marketing or advertising or fan engagement, whatever. But there were very few artists in that room because that's kind of a weird room for you to be in. And I was able to just stand out just because I was, you know, nobody else looked like me or nobody else did what I did, and was able to build relationships. And through that, doors just kept opening up. And now it's, you know, in the line of work that I do, the big get bigger and the small stay small. That's an unfortunate truth in the world of art and business, but people just want to work with who they've worked with in the past. And so it's like this catch 22 of, well, if they only work with people who they worked with in the past, how do you break in? How do you get in there? And that's really difficult to do, but I'm very fortunate to have broken in some capacity. I'm not saying that I've made it or arrived in any way, but I don't have to wonder how am I going to break in. The 0 to 1 is already done. I've already started. So now that I can just reference things that I've done in the past, and it makes it easier to get work as I go. So my life looks way different than it did 7 years ago, because I was trying to prove who I was. And now I can point back at projects I've done within the last 6 months and say, hey, we should try this for your brand or whatever. And people take me more serious. So yeah, I feel very fortunate and lucky to do what I do.
How much do you think that your, what's the word I'm looking for? Your interest and enjoyment in being around people. How much do you think that played a part in you breaking into these circles by going to these conventions? You just kind of going there is one thing. It doesn't bring any kind of guarantees in terms of making connections and nurturing rather relationships with these people.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very sneaky caveat to the work that I've been able to do. That I would think most people would pin it on some sort of artistic talent, and I don't ever talk about that. I don't ever think I have extraordinary talent in terms of artistic talent or an artistic eye. I think that what I do is pretty run of the mill, to be honest. Like, I hit the threshold of, okay, this guy's creative, but I'm not Da Vinci. I'm not doing something crazy. I'm not crazy skilled in that regard. But the thing that is a little bit different about me is I'm not an introvert, and most artists, most creative people do skew introverted. They're very into their own designs and they're into their own thing. And the thing that I like is I like connecting with people. And so when I would go to these conventions, I would make a rule to talk to 5 people. And, you know, the first 2 times you introduce yourself, nobody really cares who you are, what you're doing, and they kind of shrug you off. But then by the 3rd time you say hello, you like connect on something, and that person introduces you to somebody else. And by the end of the time that you're in that room, you've met 10 people. And, you know, one of those is a really good connection that you follow up with in 4 weeks. So a common thing that I would do is I would meet people at these conventions, and every single time you talk with someone in the industry and they're from a different city, they always say like, oh, well, if you're ever in town, like, would love to get coffee. 'Cause that's a really easy thing to say. Like, if somebody's in New York and I'm in California, there's no harm in them saying, hey, we should get together whenever you're in New York, because they're never going to expect for you to be in New York. But I would be super cheeky and go home and buy a plane ticket and then hit up every single person in New York who's like, oh, I'm actually going to be in New York in like 3 weeks. Can we get coffee? And they're like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, sounds good. And so then I would do that, like rinse and repeat, you know, going places, meeting people, having those conversations, sending a lot of stickers, and just being tenacious and following up. That's how I've been able to do it.
Yeah, there's a definite hustle aspect in there, isn't there? Like, taking no for an answer, and what many would kind of consider a throwaway comment of, oh, if you're ever in town, catch up. You're like, yeah, I'll see you there then. And you will speak to me.
Well, not. It's like it's just a thing that they'll say, and they mean it, but they just never expect you to take them up on it, because that's what you would just say to friends. But when you do call that bluff, let's call it a bluff, they're not offended, and the conversations are not long. It's, you know, hey, I'm in town. Let's get coffee for 30 minutes, and it's most of the time not about business. It's more like, I'm interested in what they do. I like learning about how their position relates to sport, or, you know, what they're doing in the business. And I'm just trying to learn if there's ways that I can add value, or if not, then just, you know, just learn. Like, this is how the industry works. And I think a lot of those conversations have allowed me to, when I go into these meetings with clients who actually want to work with me, I can speak their language because, you know, football is one language, but the business of football is another. The business of football and creativity is another. You have to like, you're like code switching and to talk about like languages. You know, if you speak both Spanish and English, it's very common in California for that to be a thing. And you'll be walking down the street and someone will ask the question in Spanish and the other person will switch to English and you go back and forth. And it's like this like special blend that shows like, I fully connect with you. I know exactly what you're saying. And you kind of have to do that in the business of football. You have to know what they're talking about and then how it relates to their objectives.
Do you think that, well, sorry, did you find any resistance to these connections becoming more than just that and turning into work? Because what you do is maybe not necessarily the norm within the football landscape. Was that kind of a bit of a sales pitch in your, on your part?
It's not so much a sales pitch. It's, I would harken it closer to like when you pass a refrigerator and you see the magnet on the refrigerator, you see the business and you're like, oh, that business exists, but you're not necessarily going to order that pizza that day. But when you do decide to order a pizza, oh, it's like, oh yeah, we use the magnet on the refrigerator right there. And so what I'm trying to do, because I don't know of a single time that on the first interaction I've talked with someone that they're like, oh yeah, we have this really random mural job that we would love for you to do. It's usually I meet them at an event or something. They understand pretty quickly, like maybe they don't understand what I do, but they know, okay, this guy did a mural for Chelsea. Like obviously he's in the soccer world, like he knows what's up, he can do large scale work. And so they kind of like clock that in the back of their head. Well, then like 2-3 months later, they might go through, you know, a marketing meeting and one of the things that'll be is we need to activate in this market with a really big piece. And it's, you know, it's pretty general like that. And a lot of times those people will reach back out and say like, hey, we got this thing. I don't even know if you're a fit. You're just like the only person that came to mind. And so then that's when I'll pitch back like, okay, like this is what I would do. This is how I would go for it. This is about what it costs. So I'm never really like at hard selling on anything. I introduce my work. I say, this is what I do. I try and show them something that they'll remember. Like, oh yeah, you painted the mural for Charlotte FC, or you did this for 1800 Tequila, you know, like something that they would remember. And then like every 6 months or so, I'll, you know, maybe send them some stickers just saying like, hey, hope you're doing great. Here's my latest batch of stickers. Like, would love to work with you, but I'm not hounding them. I'm not asking for work. I'm pretty particular in the relationships that I've already created. I have a very good relationship with the people for Adidas North America and some friends at the global level. And I'm never, ever hitting them up saying like, hey, can we work together on this project? I'm just waiting for that to come through. Just playing the long game on getting to know them, understanding what their family looks like, who they are as people, and not putting a ton of pressure on it.
Sticking with Adidas for a second and the futsal court that you designed, does creating work like that bring more of a sense of fulfillment, given you know it's being used rather than a wall piece or any other piece, or like a game piece? I know you've worked with FIFA. The fact that your artwork is being engaged with in real life, does that bring any kind of, any increased level of fulfillment compared to the others?
Yes, absolutely. I would say that's my favorite part about what I do. And that's what I'm actively trying to pitch for. You know, when I'm always talking about that side, I grew up in Southern California. In Southern California, the biggest industry out here, other than the entertainment, Hollywood, is surf skate. Like, this is where surfing really became a thing. This is where skating became a thing. And that, to me, is all about this culture of people coming together, doing the activity. There's pros in both of those activities, but people don't skate because they love Jeff Raleigh or Tony Hawk. Like, they love just the act of skating. And one of the things that they'll do is there's skate parks, there's those places where they'll go. And a lot of times there's art everywhere within that. And I love the idea of the futsal court as like the skate park for the community. So to be able to create something that the kids could play, that they could interact with my work on a way that, yeah, they're playing football, but they're also engaging in some creative activity by seeing something different on the pitch. One of the things that frustrates me about these, there's a lot of brands in I would say the last 5 years that have really started to lean into the model of let's create a new pitch for this community. And so then they create it and they do like a big opening ceremony and then they leave and people are not like really engaged with the outcome. And that's because it just looks like a regular court. But if you put a little bit more effort into the creativity behind it and what it looks like on the ground, how it looks like from the air, or, even if it's just crazy splashes of color on it, I think that it creates this feeling that, man, this court only exists here in my community, and this is my hometown piece, and it's a really fun aspect of it. I love that side of it.
How does the design process translate into gaming? Like, you do large scale pieces of work, and that's where you thrive, and then you have a commission to create work for FIFA, which is then kind of going to be used in a completely different medium. But what's the process behind that? How are you adapting?
Honestly, it's the same because it's just scaling. There's certain things, like if a work only exists digitally, then you have a much broader range of colors available to you. There's a lot of colors that only exist digitally that are only really come out digitally. And so that would be one difference. But whenever I'm doing something for a physical piece, I'm kind of sketching out the same way I would do for the digital, where I mock up, the court. It's basically just a rectangle, right? And then I just start doing thumbnail sketches. Thumbnail sketches are just the word for really small sketches that you're just trying to get like the composition or the main idea to resonate. There's like no real detail. It's just like, if you saw it, it would look like there's nothing really going on here, but it's kind of like a shorthand way for me to know, all right, I think the character should be over here. I think that there could be like a text moment here. This is how the color should lay out. And it all starts on pen and paper. And then the only difference is the output that, okay, I'm going to create this digitally. So that's on my iPad or on the tablet. Versus the physical, which would be I'm mocking it up on the iPad, but then I take that iPad with me to the futsal court and I'm chalking it out on the ground and making it happen. It's a much more physical process, obviously, but it has almost an identical iteration, like a almost identical process from the beginning.
Is there ever a scenario where, as you're mapping this out in real life, you have a realization that maybe this is not going to quite work as you'd seen it?
I think that happens no matter what I do. There's always this that looked really good as a sketch, and then the output is like, it's not the same thing. But that's true for any artist, any designer. The idea in their head is always much better than the actual output. But I like the saying that people don't attend the party in your head. They only attend the one you threw. So, like you could have all these ideas for this crazy output, but people will still enjoy what you actually did, even if it's completely different than what you originally had envisioned. So nobody's going to know what was in your head. You know, a common thing that when you compliment an artist, they will usually apologize and say like, yeah, but I, you know, I really wanted this to be like whatever. And I just don't do that. I just say thank you and appreciate what they're saying on it, because I learned that they want a very positive interaction when they talk about the work. You know, like if somebody comes up to me after I've done a futsal court, they're like, oh man, I love this. And no matter how I really feel inside, because usually it's, ah, man, that they're referencing something that I definitely wanted to change, I still respect that they see something different. And, you know, that's why I do what I do and they do what they do. They want to appreciate it. And I want to like, okay, next time I'm going to push it this way. And next time I'm going to push it this way. So, yeah, I mean, that's a great insight, but it's, that is how I feel on every single thing that I do.
does that response come from acknowledging that once you've produced it, it's in a way not yours? It's not your idea anymore. It's a thing that then belongs to the viewer. So you can't, you know, that, yeah, it's for them to interpret as they see fit. You've then got to do the work inside where you say, okay, you know what? I've got no ownership over how this is received.
Yes, yeah, definitely. I think that for most things, if the creator creates the exact message that the receiver receives, it's very flat. Like, you know, your favorite songs have very ambiguous lyrics. And they mean things that you never thought they actually did, but just the combination of the lyrics and how the music is laid out resonates with you. But a marketing campaign that says, just do it, and it's just wrote, like drilled into you, just do it, just do it. Not very creative. It's not very inspiring. It's, you know, it's just, that's the message. Like it's not ambiguous at all. That's marketing and not creation, I would say. So when you're creating something, you're not doing a message. And if you are, then in general, those pieces tend to come out very flat. And the disconnect, you know, brands do understand this now, but the entities that don't are like municipalities or cities. Cities want very literal things. So, for instance, what's pretty common is they're like, okay, the community that this court is going into is predominantly Hispanic. Should we, you know, do 10 Hispanic kids holding hands in a circle saying like we love Riverside, or, you know, wherever you're at. And that would just be like a very literal representation of community for this demographic, for this ethnic group. Like, what is that? And cities love that type of stuff. And when you see it, you're like, okay, yeah, I guess that's exactly what they wanted to communicate. But it's not inspiring. It's not creative. Doesn't move anyone. It's just like a very flat message. And there's ways to communicate those sorts of things without being so literal or being so like hand holding. I think that when you do that, the viewer feels cheated in a way that you didn't give them the opportunity to connect the dots or to kind of finish the picture in their own head. And so, yeah, I do feel like I'm creating it. I'm creating the thing that's in my head, but then the thing that's in real life is totally different. And I don't really find a burden in terms of communicating the exact thing that I set out to do. Like, I think it's okay to have the inspiration to create the work and release it into the wild.
Where does that skill set in you come from in terms of portraying a message in a more abstract, in a more abstract sense? Like, you're going back, I know you're, would you consider yourself a graffiti artist when you were younger?
I wouldn't. I think everyone would. I think that when you say graffiti, that usually tends to mean more letters heavy and like spray paint, and you're painting on illegal things, and all of those things I've done, and all, you know, it's, but I consider myself a muralist, and maybe that's the same thing in your head, but a muralist is more focused on images. Usually it's for hire. It's not necessarily illegal. It doesn't have the same connotation, but I'm comfortable with both, but I would call myself a muralist.
Okay. So as a muralist, you've got that skill set in portraying a message, but in a way that may not necessarily be so obvious, so as to give a greater impact for the recipient. But where does that come from? And what did your creative output look like before that stage?
I don't know if I've ever really thought about it, but I think I've never thought about that being a skill. So it's an interesting way to put it. I could see why you would say that, because I think that it is not common for most people to be okay with their message being ambiguous. People want to be clear when they speak, they want to be clear, but I don't think art is speaking in many ways. I think that it's creation. It's totally different. And growing up, my favorite thing to do was read. And I really enjoyed literature, and I really liked the short story medium. And there's a way to write without being so direct. You know, if you're writing in a way that's direct, that's usually a kid's story. That's a very, very deep way of getting the message across. But if you write in a way that allows the reader to experience like the human condition or about that character, it maybe will come across a little bit different what the actual message was supposed to be. But it's a beautiful way to connect with the writing. So I still do a lot of reading. I would love to write my own called short story compilation, like a bunch of short stories related around a setting or a scene or something. But I've always loved that style where it's a little bit more ambiguous, and I like thinking for myself in that way. I think it's fun to consume a film or a book and then think about it, as opposed to read the book and know exactly like, okay, this is exactly what the author was saying. You know, that's a scientific paper. That's not like a novel, or, you know, that's the difference between a documentary and a film. But then like a really good documentary kind of proposes that ambiguity in a way that a film would, where they're communicating a message, but they're not hitting you over the head with it. They're allowing you to connect the dots. So that's a great question. I've never thought about it as a skill. I've only thought about it as, this is something I'm interested in. This is something that I enjoy as the viewer, and something that I would enjoy consuming.
So you're out of high school and you're working as a barista and you're engaging in creating murals at that point. Is that your entry point into a visual creative output? That's where you're learning hard and fast in that moment, around that sort of time.
I mean, yeah, it was coming all together at the same time. I was drawing a lot on paper, but I was really interested in creating very large. So I was kind of drawing on paper to create something large. It was happening at the same time. It wasn't, but before that point, I didn't really have a history of painting or creating in really any capacity. It was just, I was really interested in the large scale mediums. I still like just things that are very, very large. Like I was in Spain last year with my wife, and we went to some museums, and the things that I was like really resonating with were really large tapestry work, specifically from Joan Miró and some other artists. It's just like really large tapestry. And so I thought, okay, that could be cool. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out a way to incorporate that into my work. But it's really a fascination with the size of the medium, as opposed to the idea or what I'm trying to convey. Like, I really like the physical aspect of it all, to like paint something really big.
That's mad to me, Jeff, that I mean, this is, yeah, as an outsider looking in, most creatives, and this is not meant in a disparaging way, but they create and there's an aim of moving having it printed in a publication, editorial pieces, digital pieces, maybe a billboard campaign, something like that, but nothing that's permanent and on such scale. I find that fascinating that that's where your head is at, where you're like, yeah, no, I want bigger and I want longevity with that as well, because you're not just putting this up on a wall and it's whitewashed in a couple of weeks. That's like, that's there now, and a piece of you and your imagination and your creativity lives in another city, and then another city, and on a court in another city. And that's quite a beautiful thing. And I guess maybe that sort of brings us back around to your enjoyment of community in some way, maybe, that you're giving a community something to enjoy and discuss and walk past and just smile. You know, those little moments like that. And it's quite a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's what we do every day. You know, why do people want to go to Paris? They want to see the Eiffel Tower. Well, what's the Eiffel Tower? The art piece. It was an installation for the World Fair in Paris. And you go around and people remark at the weird things, the things that are really large, the things like that should not be there, that are created just so people would almost remark at them. And I like that. I like how cheeky that is. I like how different it is. I like the idea of doing something that people would see and they would smile, that it would maybe bring some sort of connection point for it. I think that the courts are the best representation of that. And I think that it can like blend a few different sides of me, the love of community, the love of football, my creative side, you know, all three of those are intersecting at one, and it's cool. You know, like I think it is surreal to play on a surface that you've painted, because it feels forbidden, right? It feels like you shouldn't be ruining the surface, when in reality, like the paints I'm using are the same type of paint that you would paint the ground with for, you know, to make it blue or to make the lines. It's the same type of paint. It's going to last, but it feels forbidden. And it feels like you're back in, you know, in elementary school. I don't know how it is in the UK, but almost all the elementary schools here, we have asphalt and there's things painted on the ground. You know, you have, at the school that I went to, there was a map of the United States, like painted on the ground. And I remember playing this game where someone would call out a state and you would try and run to it without being tagged. And I just love the feeling of like stepping on the state. I don't know. It's just like this weird thing. And I think in a way, maybe I'm like chasing some of that like childhood high with these sorts of pieces.
It's immersive, I guess. There's an immersive element to that, right?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I guess it's bringing the art to life when you've got people doing that and playing on it rather than just looking at it. And I guess parts of those, like, I guess futsal court specifically, there'll be parts of the artwork that will be referenced when the players are talking about a specific point of the game or memorizing a part of the game that maybe they enjoyed particularly. And they're like, oh yeah, I was on like the splash of whatever. And then and it's just like they're picking out fragments of the wider piece. To drill down into a more specific sense of enjoyment. It sounds like your school was a lot more fun than mine. I didn't have anything fun painted on the asphalt other than some very thin white lines. I think they were scrimping on paint.
Maybe that was how I thought it was just possible. Hey, if they have the map of the United States, that's really boring, but someone liked it, we could do something really cool on a futsal court or any sort of surface, and it would be fun for the community.
So these are the early seeds of it then, going way back to elementary. That's kind of going into your subconscious.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I haven't thought about that in years. But I guess that's pretty similar to what I'm thinking, what I'm doing, why I like it so much. Just to be able to walk on it, to be able to interact with it in a way that, you know, murals on the vertical surfaces are cool. I think they look nice. They make the city look, you know, more vibrant, more human. But it's also becoming a crowded space. I think as more artists share their work online, people understand how to paint a mural easier, and it's just becoming like more of an accepted thing to do. Whereas maybe 10 years ago, that was not necessarily the case. I was a little bit more of a rare artist because I was doing murals. I'm not saying like I was better in any way, just different. Like I didn't know any other muralists, but now most of the artists that I talk to also are like, well, yeah, I also do murals. So, you know, in a way, I'm also trying to innovate and push myself into something that is harder to do. When you change the perspective, you change a lot of different aspects for it. And the paint's very expensive and it's harder to get the clients. So if you can differentiate yourself, that it's just a smarter business decision, I guess. But I also think it's a lot more fun.
Is it difficult kind of straddling that line of creative and business? So it's obviously a very, I don't want to say privileged, but it's a, I guess it's a holy grail position to be in as an artist that is earning their living through their work. So with that comes the business element that you can't really ignore. It's like two very separate parts of your brain kicking in here.
Yeah. I think this is a part that irks a lot of artists, is you have to be okay with feedback. You know, when someone's cutting you a very large check, they get to tell you what color it is. They get to tell you how big it's going to be because they're paying you that money. If they're not, then you have a lot more creative freedom. And there's projects that I did this last year that I could, you know, but I didn't really enjoy, but the money was decent and I thought it was good enough to go for. And I wouldn't really consider some of those to be like, oh, this is super artistic or really creative, because my hand was, you know, my hands were tied on certain things. Like I'm always going to pitch to be like the most creative and the best of my ability. But sometimes the client turns around and is like, yeah, I actually want what you already did, but in red, you know, like I want to what you did last time, but let's just, you know, change their logo for our logo and boom, you're good to go. And I'm always like, you know, I already did that. Let's try something else. And, you know, I can pitch it in many different ways, but at the end of the day, if they're the one cutting the check and they think that idea is better, then we got to go with that. And, you know, in my way, in my head, I guess I compartmentalize that. I don't consider myself an artist so much when I'm doing it for those brands. And more so that I'm just like really creative for the brand. And in what's been difficult in the last few years is as I've done more commercial work, my fine art, what I would consider fine art, is like things that are not for commercial use, has really suffered. I've found it very difficult to create on my own without an output. And it's a combination of excuses in terms of I'm saying I'm too busy, and I'm saying that in air quotes. But I'm not, you know, like I could definitely prioritize and make time for that. Or I'm not able to connect in my head about, well, you know, I'm used to, if you used to, you know, when you're drawing for money, it's hard to then turn around and say like, well, tomorrow I'm going to draw for no money. Like it's like, it's hard, and you have to like, you know, navigate that. And I'm like trying to figure out how to get back to that point of creating for myself and doing it in a way that feels correct for me.
You can't go and draw out $20 from the cash machine and just put it on the side. Yeah. Just some little incentives, yeah, for some doodles over there. That's a really interesting point. It's a really interesting point. And that's something that I experienced myself a few years ago. I growing up, I was always into photography, and a decent eye. Don't necessarily, or didn't at the time necessarily, possess the drive to compete in a very saturated market.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up enough work to get through maybe 5 years of doing that. But since moving away from that, I've not really picked up a camera for any kind of enjoyment because it took a lot of that out of it. And it's for those exact reasons that you said there, where you're kind of doing it for other people. And I couldn't make that separation. I was like, this is something that I've always done for enjoyment, and maybe it should have just stayed there. But you seem to have mastered that quite well with the compartmentalization. Was that a bit of a journey? Or is that just something that's come quite naturally to you?
Yeah, I'd still say it's a journey. It's something that I'm still struggling with. I have, I can see pieces that I've had on, I have this section in the warehouse that's like the art side. And I've been working on those for a year and a half, and they're very small, and they probably, if Adidas turned around and said like, hey, we want to pay you for that to be done next week, absolutely, it would be done. Like, there's no question about it. But there's something about when you create for yourself, you normally, you start to overthink everything. Like, there's no real constraints, it could be whatever, and that's something that I have lacked discipline in within the last few years. And the thing that I'm trying to get back to is more of that discipline. Well, you know, set these heavy constraints, get it out, much like I would for those large scale projects. And, just try and like get the work out to see what is possible.
Do you notice that in that output decreasing, the creative flow for the commercial work becoming more blocked in some ways? Like, you need one to aid the other, or do you feel that loss in some ways?
I definitely think so. I draw every day as like a means of just sketching to stay fresh, and it's not necessarily linked to a commercial output. And a lot of the times, what I'll do is when a commercial job comes, I will reference the sketches of the last 6 months and draw out of, like, pull things out of that. So I am saying I have a hard time creating for myself, what I mean by that is like fine art or things that you would see in a gallery. But in terms of really loose sketching or really rough sketching, like ideation, the stuff that is, you know, kind of what you would need to stay sharp, I do that quite well. And so that's kind of like the well that never runs dry for the commercial work. Because yeah, if you didn't do that, if you weren't like constantly filling yourself with some sort of inspiration or some sort of idea, then when the client comes, you would be kind of caught flat-footed. And another way that I'll you know, kind of fill that cup is when I travel, I try and go to different museums. And, you know, it doesn't really matter what the museum is. Normally there's, you know, an exhibit on some artist's retrospective. Maybe it's one particular artist. And I will become inspired by the way that they do things or the way that it's done. And sometimes that inspiration will like really drive the way that I do client work. So referencing that Spain trip earlier in the conversation, Joan Miró's work in Barcelona, and also just going to La Sagrada Familia, like seeing the cathedral and the stained glass, that influenced a lot of the things that I was pitching for in 2023, where in my actual deck that I was sending to the brands was, here's me in front of the stained glass. Like, here's me and my wife in front of the stained glass. Here's how, like, let's take this one small aspect of it into your brand. And I found that the people I was speaking with really liked that rich idea. Like, the seeing, okay, this is, you know, maybe the output that you could never say started from La Sagrada Familia. But if you were able to craft that narrative, that through line, and show like, okay, this is this, we're going to use the colorway or stained glass effect in different ways. Really was a successful way in terms of showing people how to bring a creative concept into a new thing. And that is another way that I'll incorporate that into the commercial work.
Yes, adding some rich texture to, I guess, what can sometimes be a cut and paste briefing process, right? If you're bringing a bit of your personal life and your personal experiences into that, they're going to, in turn, most likely be excited by that. We get an idea of where this guy wants to go with this now, and through a bit of real life inspiration, and the story behind why you're saying it just adds the texture to that and gets everything going in the right direction, I guess. Yeah. Moving forward, where do you see your work going, and like, what ideas and direction do you have, I guess, in terms of, you mentioned the word innovating earlier on, you know, but how long can a wall and a futsal court surface contain you?
That's a great question. I think that the futsal courts are still, I mean, there's still so much potential on that, because you have to understand that a mural on a vertical wall, while that might be a one-off event for people outside the industry, is so common. It's so easy to see at an event. Something on a wall is really not that difficult to comprehend. But things on the ground take a lot more coordination. They take a lot more, there's a way more friction, so that it will always be kind of a white space to branch out into, meaning it will always be difficult for people in the future to do something on the ground. That's going to be the case. And so I think that there is a lot of room there, and I'm constantly pitching for the surfaces to be on the ground, to do larger scale things, for them to get the vision. And I feel in many ways the friction that I did in 2015 when I was pitching to work with brands in general, and I couldn't really break in. I still feel like I'm in that zone in terms of the working on the surfaces of futsal courts or futsal courts in general. I think there's a ton to work with there. Other than that, I'm interested in really creative kits or merchandise for football entities or the brands associated with that. I think that in general, the majority of the merchandise is really bland. It's football, for better or for worse, is only about tradition. And every time a kit is released, it's usually referencing something in the past. And I think that's a miss for most football brands. Most football brands are not Real Madrid, but everyone thinks they are, and everyone thinks they have this crazy history that they really don't, just because the club is, you know, like, oh, 1890s, like whatever, like, you know, it doesn't really matter. I think that they're missing out on the potential of pushing the game forward and pushing the creativity forward by not referencing history, by creating something new, because, you know, if all we're doing is constantly remixing the past, then I don't know. It's just pretty bland. So that's what I would like to see is.
That's a great point. Yeah, if you're remixing the past, you're not moving forward in the slightest. You've just made me think of my own team. I'm a West Ham fan, and last season we had our away kit. It might be it's our third kit, maybe white kit. So we have a cycle, and a third kit is either white or a navy blue. Both of those are nods to the past, but they go on rotation. And last year we're in the white cycle, and at the bottom of the shirt, orange, yellow, red, what they labelled as sparks to reference the club's formation from an ironworks back in the 1890s. And it's like these links are becoming more and more tenuous with every passing season, yeah. Because every year you've just got to come up with another idea as to why you're making this kit. Just say it is what it is, or just throw something different at us. Yeah, They're going to buy it anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that most they're afraid that the consumer wants this narrative to the past. And I would argue, no, they don't. They want something that is, dang, this is new. This is rich. This is different. This is my team. And it's not because they were former iron workers, you know, like that's not it. I think that if you went wild, you would, I think the third kit is the place to swing and miss, where you know, you should almost make half of your fan base go, what the heck are they doing? Because the other half of the fan base will go, that kit was amazing. And then what's crazy is in 10 years, the entire fan base will be like, man, that third kit was amazing. You know, like it's that cycle. You have to be willing to toe the line. But I think what happens nowadays is this really like muddy output. I think Tottenham is doing that, right? Like the things they release are so bland. So wow. And it's not really like exciting people to wear it. I think, you know, the product on the field is always different. I'm not commenting on that, whether or not the team is doing well. I'm just talking about the identity and what it looks like and how people can support it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You mentioned the possibility of alienating half a fan base with a gnarly kit design, because what you could do in turn is attract the attention of fans around the world and in turn increase your global footprint, which is what a lot of elite end clubs want to be doing there anyway. But it just does take a little bit of bravery from one marketing department. Maybe someone that's kind of on their way out, they've quit their job or something like that, and they just sign off on something crazy. And
yeah, go out with a bang. I think that's why a lot of these clubs are referencing kits that they did in the 90s when there were less eyes on it. But everyone loves those kits. Everyone loves how crazy they were. Everyone loves how loud they were. Every World Cup, the kits that are talked about are the ones that push the envelope. Like, sure, there's ones that are like, oh, you know, the Germany kit was very classic Germany. But then, you know, the Mexico away kit was unreal, and we're going to reference that for years to come, even though they never even played in it. That kit sold out immediately because it connected with the demographic so well. It, you know, was referencing Aztec, Mayan works in a way that felt fresh. It felt like they understood the assignment, and it was really, really well done. Same is true with the Nigeria kits in 2018, right? Like 2014, like it's just people want something different. They want to see something crazy and like really celebrate that.
How does your work translate to a kit design? You're bringing that scale right down, and you're on a completely different medium again.
I think everything in the creative landscape is constraints, and those constraints are healthy. So I start the same way that I would for the futsal court, which would be small thumbnail sketches of a shirt, and then just trying to like incorporate different elements. I'm working on some kits right now for a local team. They're USL2, so it'd be like third or fourth division in USA. So it's a smaller club, and I'm trying to push the envelope of what's possible. But I'm also finding that friction in those small clubs. Well, I think the opportunity there is no history, so you should just grow. You should go crazy. A lot of times, those small clubs are like, well, we want to be, you know, reference whatever their favorite boyhood club is. We want to be Manchester United. It's like, okay, great. You're never going to be Manchester United. That there's only one Manchester United. So you should just go hard. And so I think the friction for me is not on the creative side, but on the output, on like, it's not hard for me to ideate or come up with things that are different. It's hard for the people who are signing it off to really understand what I'm doing. And, you know, that's arrogant for me to say, but it's also like, that's just the friction that every designer has with anything that they do throughout. Like, you're competing against the person signing off, and you have to see the common ground and come to a good resolution on it.
Well, I look forward to seeing how that turns out, mate.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I'm hoping they see it. They see it my way.
Mate, it just seems like you're having a lot of fun doing what you're doing, and as a result, helping or enabling a lot of other people to enjoy themselves through your work. And I love the fact that we landed on a thread all the way back to elementary school there, where you are playing around on giant murals on the floor. It's just there's a warming feeling to that, that maybe the career path you've landed on, or that that you've carved out for yourself, rather, you didn't just land here. There's a lot of work and commitment that's gone into it. There's something quite warming in the fact that it was there all along, you know? There's a beauty in that, something quite poetic.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
I really appreciate you spending the time with me and sharing a lot of that with me. It's really interesting to learn and look forward to seeing what comes, mate.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Thanks for reaching out.
Oh, no worries at all. And I'll leave you to warm up in the warehouse now. Maybe you need to do some shuttle runs in there or something like that. Looking pretty chilly.
Yeah, for sure. I'll make it happen.
Nice one, mate. Take it easy.
All right.
Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. All right. Later.
Bye, mate.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you haven't already, I'd love you to hit the follow button and forward it on to a friend. You can also find us on social media via @NPLHMag. And subscribe to our weekly newsletter via nplhmag.com. See you next time. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to hit the follow button, and I'll see you next time.